Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Zan.
Hi, everybody. I'm Zan. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Zan.
And for all those on the podcast, I look really cute tonight. Start with a little OA ego-centered, self-centered humor to remind me that I'm just another bozo on the bus, but I've got on my dazzling shoes tonight. Oh, and I want to thank Seppi for asking me to come tonight. Thank you, Michelle. Happy birthday. Is it Cindy? Oh, I have to show you my socks for your Maltese. This will not be on the podcast, but they're my kitty socks. Okay. I have to be totally goofy to get over myself. Yeah, I'm really grateful. I cry a lot. Fair warning. And it's going to start right now. Because I just, you know, like you, could not stop shoving candy down my throat. You know, all the diets, pre-digested liquid protein, you're all way too young to remember that, except maybe a few of you extra cute people. Dr. Atkins, which I like to talk about as the original keto diet. Are we not supposed to name names like that? No, I went on that one and I ate as much bacon and cheese and meat and fried pork rinds. They recommended that, right? Healthy. And I loved it because I loved eating all that stuff. And then I ate like one nectarine and gained 20 pounds. That's not true, but it started with one nectarine. That's, you know, and like every binge, you know, I'll just have one, right? And put my water down here, but yeah. So that was one diet. I actually, so really excited about the birthday party, right? It's okay if you're not going. put this here. Thanks, David. And I'm on the committee. And I'm in charge of the history room, which is good for my age. I came into OA in 1976, before women had the right to vote. That's my joke. Long time ago, but I know it was a lot, like way before a lot of you were born. Welcome. And so in the history room, it's a room where we display a lot of really cool documents about Roseanne, our founder, and we even have, hopefully we'll have a video of her. So I've been compiling documents and things, and hopefully one of them actually is, trying to reach out to my doctor. Let's divert to outside issues for a minute. There's a certain drug on the market out there right now. And anyway, makes me nuts, but that's a tangent. Anyway, there's this great pamphlet I picked up. It's called When Should I Refer Someone to Overeaters Anonymous? And it's, of course, distributed by OA.org to members of the helping professions. And what I love about it is it has that test, a self-test, to determine if you're an overeater. And what I love is that it reminds me of the olden days, because I remember reading it when I first walk in the doors. So I'm going to read some of the questions because I just think it's so fun. And you know what? Guess what? Raise your hand if you haven't been in another 12-step program besides OA. You don't have to raise your hands, but like I've been in others, and the reason I bring it up is because I've done the tests in those two, and I do not pass them as well as I pass this one. This one I get extra credit. So do I eat when I'm not hungry, or do I eat when or not eat when my body needs nourishment? Do I go on eating binges for no apparent reason, sometimes eating until I'm stuffed or even feel sick? Do I have feelings of guilt, shame, or embarrassment about my weight or the way I eat? Do I eat sensibly in front of others and then make up for it when I'm alone? I used to do this thing. I was this ballet dancer, this very dedicated, aspiring ballet dancer. So we were not allowed to eat. So like we would go out to dinner with our teacher and I'd have the good salad, right? And then there was this weird obsession, whatever anyone else was eating, then I would go home and have to eat that times 10. So yeah, I would eat, you know, properly in front of others and then go binge my guts out. My standard binge would be 8 candy bars, half a pizza, pint of ice cream. And I once said that, and someone said to me, only half a pizza? I don't remember. It was a long time ago, but it was bad. Is my eating affecting my health or the way I live my life? I mean, it's just nuts. When my emotions are intense, whether positive or negative, do I find myself reaching for food? So anyway, cool pamphlet. You know, it's funny. I mean, it does kind of baffle me the way the medical establishment reacts to OA. Again, kind of a tangent, but I actually remember I called up NPR about, it was 20 years ago now, because they were talking about overeating. And, you know, I said, I think it was on the air, and they were interviewing, okay, I'm about to bash academia, forgive me, but some fancy academic at some fancy university. And, you know, and I presented him the information that, you know, I haven't had to eat in a couple decades, overeat, and I'm maintaining a 45-pound weight loss, which I am, and today I celebrate, through the grace of God, 42 years of abstinence, you know, but thanks. You know, but then I mentioned, like, you know, probably not by name, but my sponsor at that time, I'm going to mention her name because she's no longer with us, and it's out of love. Her name was Natalie, and she maintained a 250-pound weight loss for, like, I don't know what, 30 years, 40 years. You know, so I was delivering these statistics, and like, both the reporter and the academic just like shut me down. And, you know, I just remember thinking, like, the only rational response to what I had just said would be, ma'am, you know, we'd really like to talk to you a little bit more. Stay on the line and our associate will get your phone. You know, so anyway, I just go off sometimes. I'm full of opinions, which is why it's really good I'm on the OA board, not board, birthday committee, because because I want everyone to do it my way and listen to my brilliance. And that's a very lonely existence. Let me just tell you that. So, it, you know, that there's this great term in another program I got about situations like that are my sandpaper. They round off my rough edges. So, but you know, mostly it's been really fun, and I need that connection in that community. So, where am I going with this? Yes, I started overeating in those ballet days, and I've always said I would like to blame it on the ballet, because we'd be in rooms like this, only there were wall-to-wall mirrors, right, and pink tights, and I had a very fanatical teacher who would be in jail today, but he used to weigh us and in front of all the other girls and boys. And then I gained 2 pounds in puberty, and he started in on me. But all of us used to swear at us, obscenities that no 13, 14, 15-year-old should even be hearing. He used to hit us with the wooden dowel that he kept time with, and other things. He used to throw record players across the room if we didn't dance perfectly. So, you know, I was happy as a clam in that environment. I'm going to cry, because it's like, well, at least there was there were rules, and I could figure out how to please someone and to make sense of the world, you know. And so, and also, I love dancing. You know, we tend to put ourselves down here. Like, even in our worst moment, there's often an element of great love and great beauty. And so anyway, why I like to bring that up is because I would like to blame my disease on all of those things, and had absolutely nothing to do with any of that. I could have been a horseback rider. I could have been a scientist, you know, and we have those people in our rooms. And I just believe that I was basically born with this disease. It didn't start to show on the outside until about the age of 12. And then it did. And then I was off to the races with all of those diets. So let's see. Yeah, what else did I do in that? Well, one of my first diets was my mom's. Okay, 1950s. What did 1950s moms go on a diet with? Hard-boiled eggs and grapefruit juice. And cottage cheese. And I don't think in 42 years of abstinence I've ever had a breakfast of a hard-boiled egg. Let me just tell you that. So, yeah, anyway, diet, 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 binging. And then in 1976, I saw this gal at UC Santa Barbara where I was going to school. And she had on short shorts, and great legs. And of course, I looked at what she was eating because I saw her in the cafeteria, and it was a plate full of vegetables. And I think I must have just gone right up to her and said, "How do you stay thin?" or something. Well, her name is Jill. I'm going to cry again. And she was my Eskimo. Not everyone knows the term Eskimo. It's the person that introduces you to OA. That's how we use it here, or how I use it. And you know what? We're both still here. We walk every Friday now, and her legs are still the same way. And you know, and yeah. And so I came to my first meeting over at Palms Park. That meeting is still there. And Wednesday night. And you know, two very, very different things happened. One of them, I knew this was it, because I had been dieting long enough to know that I was licked. And also, I had read enough women's magazines to know that the stats were against me. I had read, let me put it that way, something like 89% of the people who lose their weight gain it back again. So, and I had never successfully lost their weight. I was not a yo-yo. I was just a yo. And I kept going up in these 10-pound increments and being horrified by that new number or landmark on the scale. And unthinkable that I'd keep going up. But I did, you know. So when I came here, and I think there were three things that got my attention particularly, at least in retrospect. You'd lost your weight. Wow. B, you were keeping it off. Unthinkable. And C, you had lost the craving. I knew that would never happen for me. Like, maybe I could lose weight. But I knew nothing would... It just sounded like you guys were from Wizard of Oz or something. Unreachable. You know, and today, through the grace of God... It has been plucked out of me, you know. I mean, who could abstain white knuckling it, even for a day, let alone 42 years, you know. Took me 5 years to get there, binging my guts out in OA. But I really love how the big book phrases it. Oh, by the way, do we have a timer so I can sort of gauge? Can you give me like a ding at 10 minutes before the end? And yeah, great. Because I like questions best anyway. So let's see, what was I talking about? Can we...
Big book.
The big book, what's that? Thank you, Seppi. Yeah, I love it. Says we've been placed in a position of neutrality. We didn't place ourselves there. And that, in a nutshell, is what I had always been trying to lick this disease. I had always thought that an application of self-will would get me thin. And in fact, when I came here and you said it was the opposite of that, that was one of the things when I walked in, that contrary experience, I was like, no, that is not how Dubins behave in the world, right? You know, there's this phrase in one of the books too, it talks about like a headlong assault of the will. That's my style, okay? Give that, you know, and but surrender, not gonna happen. you know, and someone mentioned, you know, if I could just figure it out. That is my default today. I have to be very careful about that because, see, I'm quite brilliant, and so my brain, no, I'm kidding, but many of us, I think, are, you know, analysis paralysis, right? And that's my default. Well, if I could just figure it out, and I have to be reminded by my fellows that, no, Zan, that's not how it works. So, but I am just here to say that nothing convinced me to try another way. Not any of those fantastic sponsors I've had, not the big book, not you guys, the food did, okay? The book calls it the great convincer. It's the only thing that made me willing to put down the fork. And it kind of happened to me. I didn't, anyway, yes, I just kept binging in OA, coming to meetings and binging. I would drive to the meeting eating cookies. Once I was in New York City for a while, and there was a meeting at someone's home, and I ate a Baby Ruth candy bar in the bathroom at her home during a meeting, or at the break of a meeting. At least it was during the break. You know, so Nobody ever laughs at that, but I think it's kind of funny. But or maybe it's tragic. It's definitely tragic. And I desperately want it. You know, I feel like I want to say, don't judge your level of want here, you know, because I always thought, well, I have to want it with all of my heart and soul, or it's never going to happen. And I remember that in the early days, someone saying, all you need is like 51% willingness, and what a great relief. And in fact, to me, it doesn't even matter. I'm going to cry again if you want it. Like, because I have to tell you guys, I don't know what a higher power is. I am not a spiritual beacon. I'm an action person, okay? And the thing that caught my attention here was I didn't have to feel anything. I didn't have to feel willing. I didn't have to want to come to a meeting. I didn't have to want to abstain. I just had to get there. And that gave me freedom. I love talking about my background at this point because I love my parents so much, who I've lost in the last decade or so, and have come to love them much more since then. Why is that? It's hysterical. It's tragic. And, you know, I appreciate them so much, but they were theatrical, okay? Literally. My dad, I'm going to say it because it's part of my story. He was a director, a fairly famous television director. And then my mother was an aspiring actress. And by the way, both of them were blacklisted in the late 50s for beliefs. So, you know, I just feel so grateful. How does that relate to OA? Because I grew up, and I don't blame them either. I find freedom in, yes, my parents and my outside affected who I am, but it's also how I reacted to all. And why is that freedom? Because then I have a chance at changing my behavior with help from a higher power rather than constantly blaming. Anyway, so in my family, it was all about you had to feel things with a passion in a theatrical way in order to do anything. And if you don't, you're doing it wrong. And also, I like the history part. I was brought up in the 60s, 70s, baby. And if it feels good, do it, was one of the slogans. And also, screw the one you're with. No, love the one you're with. It was Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And, you know, so it was like, hey, if it felt good, do it. And so if it didn't feel good, the message to me was, so it was a tremendous freedom to be told here to act as if. I mean, I love that. And I have everything because of that. I mean, I have my own business and I have a client. And, you know, I'm just here to say that I had to pinch myself today because I had to pick up the phone, you know, without kind of like my boss's instruction and do something that I thought he might not approve of, but I did it because I knew it was right, you know. And where did I get that courage? By thanking the speaker at the end of the meeting, you know, and principles before personalities. I realized recently that sometimes I have to be willing not to be liked. You know, it's not just me accepting you and putting principles before, but it's me, you know. So I have to be willing if I am going to, you know, adhere to a principle. Anyway, yes. So kept eating in OA. We had this fabulous meeting. Somebody talked about this meeting being, it was Saturday morning. It was called Maintainers Meeting. And there were more like 150 or so, something routinely. And I'm going to tell you a little bit of really fun history. Podium like this. And there was a sign on the podium every Saturday. And it said, in order to share, you have to be within 10 pounds of your goal weight and 30 days of abstinence. And look, I'm just here to tell my story, but I really think that brought the best out of people. Mm-hmm. And I kind of loved it. And in fact, I still use the term goal weight. I may be lynched for that today, but I think it's clarity. Clarity is everything for me. So anyway, that's what happened at that meeting. And also back in the day, so this was early 1980s, and we also had a lot of AA influence back then, partly because we were so young that used to get AA speakers who weren't even overeaters, you know. And that backbone, I mean, I love that backbone. I also, my first sponsor was an AA as well as an OA, and she required me to go to one AA meeting a week. And what I heard there, just some of the most life-saving principles of, you know, you can lose your home, your dog, your wife, your husband, your job, but don't pick up. You know, just don't take that drink. And I needed to hear that over and over. It worked for my perfectionism and ego. And all that ballet, you know, the corps de ballet is all those swans in the back. There's usually like 30 of them, and they're all identical. I had no interest in that, okay? I wanted to be the prima, they call it, the one, the soloist, you know. And that ego was killing me. That's why I like to say I'm just another bozo on the bus. And that's a term I hear today when I go to AA meetings, because I still need that ego reduction constantly. So anyway, yeah, we would get a lot of AA influence. So anyway, I kept eating. And one Friday night, right before the Saturday morning meeting, I had a binge. And I had lost some weight in OA with periods of abstinence. And that Friday night with that binge, I got really, really scared that I was going to gain it all back and that I was losing control, you know. And that's a really good thing. Fear, I've come to believe in my, this is a pearl of wisdom, get your pens out. You know, fear can be my friend, actually. And I don't go for that saying, I can't have fear if I'm in faith. Oh, yeah, yes, I can. I've done so many things that I'm completely afraid of. But again, it's that blessing of I just get to do it anyway. And vanity, you know, vanity inspired me. So, and what it inspired me to do was to go to that meeting the next morning and do something very different. And that was to ask a sponsor to sponsor me who intimidated me. Because I'd been going around OA getting people who, I'm not naming names here. I'm not looking at anyone. My sponsor's not in the room, but I'd been getting sponsors who made me feel comfortable, you know. And in fact, one of them told me I could eat whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And I tried that, and it just didn't work for me. Anyway, I asked this gal, and she was hardcore. And everything changed that day forward. I started to go to, you know, 7 to 9 meetings a week. I jumped in with both feet. And what that did, of course, was take me out of my isolation, et cetera, go to a lot of AA meetings. And you know, this is a part in my story, and this is why I don't get booked to be the keynote speaker at the birthday parties, because at this point in my story, I feel like a complete failure. I reach a screeching halt, because how do you talk about, what is it now, 42 years? I can figure it out. I think I've said a lot of really, you know, like step one is my favorite, and I kind of don't understand step two, or it's an action step for me. But I do kind of like to talk about my recent experience with what I call depression. So in 2016... I absolutely hit the skids. So at that point, I had over 30 years of abstinence, and I became basically paralyzed and took to my bed, literally. I'm a former newspaper reporter, you know, very gutsy job, very active in OA, had been married, swing dancing, all of this stuff came to an end. I spent 4 years there. The first two were literally on my bed in the bedroom, and then I got tired of the landscape, and I went to the couch in the living room. And Downton Abbey got me through. That's what I spent my days doing, both watching it and then, and I'm saying this for a reason, I joined these Facebook groups about the show, which what we did all day long was analyze character and plot. And what that did was enable me to just stay right up here and not feel any feelings and all this stuff, and kind of kept me connected. But I stopped going to meetings. I didn't swear off. I just would not leave the house. I remember, Seppi, having lunch with you before I went down, and yeah, thank you. I love you. Yeah, and in fact, this is the one anecdote I use to explain how bad it got. And of course, I share this, A, because it's my story, and B, in case you hit the skids, you know, I came out of it. I hope to give hope. So it's been 4 years, in fact, and I'm back swing dancing. I just joined a swing dance team, and West Coast Swing, in case you're interested. 10 minutes, thank you. So, and there is a major surrender point I want to make at the end of all of this, but this is just horrible anecdote. So I'm a big coffee lover, okay? I gave up coffee in this period, like unthinkable. Why? Because it would have meant one more trip from the couch to the kitchen. Kid you not, it was only like that far away. Paralyzed. Why did this happen? How did this happen? I've analyzed it up and down, but here's my analysis. First of all, you know that saying, God doesn't give us more than we can handle? Here's my saying, oh, yes, he does. And I mean that in a good way. I had to go down. Sometimes I think we just had to go down. Like my short version of this is, why did I go down for 4 years? I needed a long nap for any number of reasons, you know. But I also had, one of the reasons I'm going to put in there is maybe stinking thinking, maybe pushing too hard at life, you know, all of that stuff. But I'm also going to say I had a lot of loss. Like, grief is my favorite new thing. Not trauma, because, like, I have a friend who says, trauma is like this thing where you can never get over it. But grief is, like, hardcore. And I joke, but, okay, so let's see. So my brother committed suicide in 1996, and then I lost my dad, and then I lost my mom. And I am here to tell you, look, I'm 66. Most of us by late 50s have lost, you know, but it hit me. It just hit me way harder than I thought. And then I had very early stage breast cancer. I got divorced. And then by the time I went down, I could no longer work. Something was going on with my brain. I don't know what it was. I won't talk about outside issues. But I also therefore lost my career. So I stayed down. I did keep in close touch with some OA friends. And how did I get up? So at the end of 4 years, did not think it would ever change. Who would? It had been 4 years. But muscle memory of OA came in. And, you know, I never used to like the phrase, every meeting is like a deposit in the bank. For some reason, that just didn't resonate with me because I thought, well, that doesn't sound very one day at a timey or like there's no guarantees. But with this experience, I kind of feel like that, like it was still in my bones. And this thought came into my head that I should make some sort of a prayer. But it was a prayer, and I did. But it was a very kind of different prayer. I said, God, which I had no relationship with, I don't want to change. And I didn't. I said, God, I'm not going to change. Completely defiant. God, I can't change. So it was want, can't, and won't. 2 weeks later, I got up. And is there someone like having, okay, sorry. Oh, I thought it was like a meeting in the next room. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. So, so I said that prayer, and here's what I think is, again, because it's like when I got absent, I didn't know what a higher power was. I was not relying on a higher power my first day of absence. Are you kidding? I had no relationship. All I had was food in my stomach. But I had completely surrendered. I just said, I can't. That to me is precious. I love step one. I am, in fact, speaking on step one at the birthday because the person said, what would you like? Here's four topics. I said, step one. Because as long as I'm rooted in that, I have 42 years of abstinence. In fact, I'll share a little secret. If I don't pick up between now and February 1st, I'll have 43 years. But I am as powerless and weak and powerless over food in this moment as the second I walked in these doors. And as long as I stay there, I feel safe. So that's what this thing was, this prayer that I made. It was not a plea. It was not asking for help. It was just saying, I can't. And to me, that's the magic. That's the magic. And as I said, you know, I love it when I hear people say, I would tell you about my life today, but you'll get jealous because it's so good. But yeah, no, I'm back at work. I'm doing the dancing. Friends, you know, lots of close friends, and so grateful. So I'll end it there, and I just wish, I'll just say another word for my two favorite words in this program, and that's I can't. Thanks a lot for listening. All right. So like 6 minutes of questions, right? Yay. Okay. Yes.
Thank you for your share. I was wondering how you define your abstinence.
Okay. She asked how I define my abstinence. Thanks. So let's see. I don't eat sugar. Fruit is really the only sugar I eat. I weigh and measure. I'm a kind of person where option is the devil. And I mean, you know, so that there's a real hard lines around my food. Not perfect, and I don't do it when I'm out, but it gives me great peace to do that at home. And it's basically produce and protein. Right.
Thank you, Senator, a lot. I'm almost hesitant to ask, do you happen to have a daily OA, I'll use the word ritual or habit or...
Thank you. I meant to lead with that because I knew someone would ask. So he asked, do I have a sort of standard OA daily practice? I do. I wake up and I, before feeding the cats, I read a bit of spiritual literature. I personally like the 24-hour-a-day book, which is from AA. And then I meditate for 5 minutes, which I've been doing for 4 years, which is my record in OA. Started off at 3, and I let myself do it so imperfectly. Although lately I am trying to focus on the idea of paying attention to your breath and then realizing when you've wandered away from that, because that kind of awareness, I'm hoping to become more self-regulated. And catching myself when I'm going off or getting too emotional is if I can do that in my 5 minutes, it can bleed into the day. And so from there, let's see, I think those are the two main things in the morning. And then, you know, as far as daily, I don't think there's anything really daily, but I go to about 3 meetings a week. I do a lot of service. I have a home group. I have a sponsor, and she knows it. That's another joke I heard. And you know, I really strongly believe in staying in touch by phone in this program, not by text, but actually by phone. But it, because I've been around so long and I'm so close to people, it's really easy to pick up that phone today. But I do try to sort of force myself now and then to try to call newcomers, and then just people new to me, because I really believe in that practice. When the phone gets heavy again, and it does, I believe that's so spiritual. Yes.
How would you say that you define or don't define your higher power?
Right. Thank you. How do I or don't define my higher power? These days, and it does change a lot, it's very much just about action. And I'm, the book says action is the magic word. I'm actually in a book study right now, and it's driving me nuts because we're in the first part, like we're not even past page 57 or so. And it's all about coming to believe in a power greater than, and it's funny to feel rebellious at this stage. But we just read a part that said, all we have to do is seek. And so that was such, we don't have to find. And so I seek, you know, upping my meditation practice, just found a really cool new podcast, whatever it is. You know, the book says, be quick to see where religious people are right. What I would love is that warm, cozy, sort of big father in the sky higher power. And I do have that. Sometimes too. I'd like to have more of it. So it's a whole bunch of different things. Thanks. Seppi.
Sammy.
Love you to pieces.
Thank you. One of the most amazing things you taught me, and I wonder if you could talk about it, please, was aim for average. In the beginning, as a former ballerina, you said to me, aim for average. Can you talk about that, please?
Thank you. She asked me to talk about aiming for average. And it brings up something which I think is related, I hope so, but is so precious to me. My dear, dear friend, Doreen, in the program, she taught me that if all I did every day was get up, eat my three meals, and hit the pillow abstinent, I've had a perfect day. So, yes, because, you know, again, like I was out to be that ballerina, to be that better than you, a lot of comparing competition, to rule the world, to get that degree, you know, and things like that would make me eat or make me want to eat. And I had to really relearn, you know, to be average and to put abstinence as the most important thing in my life without exception. We heard that all the time in the beginning, and that's where that is. And so I made a pact, for instance, with my sponsor when I went back to get my undergraduate degree in the program to get C's, you know, and I graduated with a B+ average. Anyway, that's my time. Thank you all for listening.